Leader of the Islamic Revolution strongly condemns a desecration of the Holy Quran, saying arrogant powers attacks are aimed at Islam itself. Russia decries UNESCO's decision on the Ukrainian city of Odessa as politically motivated, saying it violates the world body's own standard procedures. And Peru reports shortages of basic products, including food and fuel, due to numerous roadblocks over a month and violent anti-government protests. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Now, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has strongly condemned the desecration of the Holy Quran under the slogan of freedom of speech. Leader said insane desecration of the Quran shows arrogant powers attacks are aimed at Islam itself and the Quran. Ayatollah Khamenei added, the Quran is shining more brightly every day and the future belongs to Islam despite arrogant powers' plots. He also called on the world's freedom seekers to stand by Muslims in confronting the wicked plot of insulting sanctities and spreading hate. Leader's remarks came after the notorious Swedish-Danish extremist Rasmus Paludan was allowed by the Swedish government to burn Islam's holy book in front of the Turkish embassy in Stockholm. Paludan was protected by Swedish police while committing the sacrilege, which has opened the floodgates of protests in the Muslim world. We discussed the issue of the West's insults against Islam under the pretext of freedom of speech with writer and analyst Saeed Shahabi.
Of course, the double standards always are characteristics of those policies of those countries. Unfortunately, to burn somebody's holy book, any book, the book of Muslims, the Holy Quran, or the Bible, or the Torah, or any other book that is sacred to any nation, to any group of people, is just an incitement of hatred, incitement for violence. And that is against the fundamentals of modern statehood and modern society. About 2.1 billion Muslims, 2.1 billion Muslims in the world. Why on earth do we really look to infuriate them? What is there in the freedom of speech? So why is it only the Quran that is the, being victimized and being burned and being slandered? I think there is a lot to be done in the West, in NATO, in the EU, against this move.
Iran's foreign minister has strongly slammed the European Parliament's recent stances and measures against the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps as unconstructive. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark in a phone call with his French counterpart, Catherine Colonna. He was referring to an amendment adopted by the European Parliament, which calls on the European Union to include the IRGC, that is, in its so-called terror list. Amir Abdollahian said the IRGC not only protects Iran's national security, but has also played an important role in the real fight against terrorism in the region. He added, Iran is carefully observing the European Union's behavior and will take further proportionate measures in response. Amir Abdollahian said Iran prefers talks and diplomacy, but will give an immediate and effective response to any intervention in its affairs. Tehran's blacklisted dozens of individuals and entities in the European Union and UK in retaliation for recent anti-Iran sanctions imposed by Brussels and London. Iran's foreign ministry said those blacklisted instigated terrorism against the Iranian nation, and they interfered in the Islamic Republic's internal affairs, fanned violence and instability, and spread misinformation. And according to the foreign ministry, those sanctioned were also involved in stepping up illegal restrictive measures against the people of Iran. Tehran had vowed to respond to the sanctions imposed by the EU and UK. On Monday, Brussels and London, together with Washington, announced bans against dozens of Iranian individuals and entities over Tehran's response to recent riots. Russia decries a decision by UNESCO to add the historic center of the Ukrainian port city of Odessa to its World Heritage List. Moscow says the world body's decision is politically motivated and violates standard procedures. Russian Foreign Ministry said the UNESCO's decision was prepared hastily, stressing just six countries voted in favor. Russia said only threat Odessa faces comes from the nationalist regime in Ukraine. It accused Ukraine of destroying monuments in the area that it sought to protect. Reaction came after UNESCO's decision was approved by members with 6 votes in favor, 1 against, and 14 abstentions. The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, had requested the listing back in October, claiming it will protect the city from Russian bombardment. U.S. President Joe Biden says his country will provide Ukraine with Abrams battle tanks.
Today, I'm announcing that the United States will be sending 31 Abrams tanks to Ukraine, the equivalent of 1 Ukrainian battalion. Secretary Austin has recommended this step because it will enhance the Ukraine's capacity to defend its territory and achieve its strategic objectives. The Abrams tanks are the most capable tanks in the world. They're also extremely complex to operate and maintain. So we're also giving Ukraine the parts and equipment necessary to effectively sustain these tanks on the battlefield. We'll begin
to train them on these issues. Biden says tanks are necessary to help Ukrainians improve ability to maneuver in open terrain. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reacted to the announcement, saying decision is an important step on the path to victory and liberation of Ukraine. Moscow denounced the Washington's plan as blatant provocation. U.S. was at first unwilling to do so, but then believed to have changed tack to convince Germany to send its Leopard tanks to Kyiv. U.S. has been on the front line of supplying arms to Kyiv, and it's pumped a slew of weapons and munitions into Ukraine worth billions of dollars. And the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has also announced the country's decision to send long-awaited Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine to help it in its war against Russia.
We will also provide Ukraine with Leopard 2 main battle tanks. This is the result of intensive consultation, once again, with our allies and international partners.
Scholz also approved re-export of third-generation tanks from partner countries. Addressing Parliament, the top official, however, cautioned that Western states against further inflaming the conflict and escalating it into a war between Russia and NATO. Meantime, Moscow has called the decision extremely dangerous, saying new delivery will take the conflict to a new level. Moscow says the move confirms Berlin's involvement in what it calls a war that was planned in advance. The German defense minister, however, has rejected that claim.
The new decision deserves the respect of everyone who is concerned that this war will continue in this way and that we will possibly suffer more from it at some point than we would like today. But one thing is clear, we won't become a party to the war. We will make sure of that.
Pistorius added Germany is holding talks with partners to send the powerful weapons as soon as possible. Norway also announced it will send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine. However, it did not specify how many. Sweden, for its part, said it does not exclude sending the tanks yet, but Stockholm said it can also help Ukraine in other ways, like logistics, maintenance, and training.
In an article published on Responsible Statecraft, it is said that the U.S. role in Ukraine has slowly escalated since the beginning of the war there almost a year ago, saying the question now is how far Washington is willing to go. When the U.S. involves itself in a conflict, it often finds it difficult to get itself out. For instance, it happened in Vietnam. The U.S. military advisors helping the South Vietnamese fight Viet Cong forces eventually became U.S. soldiers fighting an American war. Or in Afghanistan, an initial invasion under the pretext of fighting Al-Qaeda terrorists morphed into 2 decades of war and destruction that resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands of Afghans. The same scenario could be unfolding in Ukraine. Less than a month into the Ukraine war, the US President Joe Biden stated that the US and NATO allies would not fight Russia in Ukraine. However, little by little, Washington and NATO are creeping closer to the catastrophic scenario Biden had described as World War III. Biden had also claimed the U.S. troops will not be sent to Ukraine to take part in the conflict. However, several current and former American intelligence officials told The Intercept back in October that there is a much larger presence of both CIA and U.S. special operations personnel in Ukraine than there was when the war began, saying they are conducting clandestine American operations in the country that are now far more extensive. An 8-year Army Special Operations veteran, who is now an investigative journalist, reported in December that among those covert operations is the CIA's work with an unnamed NATO allies spy agency to carry out sabotage operations within Russia. Reportedly, the cause of the unexplained explosions that have rocked Russian infrastructure throughout the war. Meanwhile, the United States and its NATO allies have serially blown past their own self-imposed lines over arms transfers. At the start of the war, analysts cautioned that the overt supply of even small arms and light weaponry risks encouraging a wider war and possible retaliation from Moscow, while U.S. officials ruled out more advanced weaponry as too escalatory. It took less than 2 months for the Biden administration to start sending these more risky tranches of high-powered arms. By the end of May, it was sending advanced rocket systems. In addition, NATO arms transfers have now escalated well beyond what governments had worried just months ago could draw the alliance into direct war with Russia, with the US and European governments now sending armored vehicles and planning to send tanks.
The U.S. and Germany have announced plans to send these tanks to Ukraine and indicates a broad shift in mood of Western countries, which has so far avoided sending the heavy weaponry to Kiev. Now, Russia has repeatedly warned West pseudo support for Kiev will only escalate the conflict and increase people's suffering.
Russia has warned the United States against its planned delivery of Abrams tanks to Ukraine. Anatoly Antonov, Russia's ambassador to the United States, has described the move as a blatant provocation against Moscow. He accused Washington of purposefully trying to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. The warning came before the U.S. announced the delivery of dozens of its main battle tanks to Ukraine. Two American officials have been quoted as saying that the timeline of any potential delivery remains unclear and could take months or even years. Washington has said previously that providing Abrams tanks to Ukraine is not feasible, citing difficulties in training and maintenance. Meanwhile, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has decided to send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine and to allow other countries such as Poland to send the same tanks from their own stockpiles to Kyiv. Until now, Berlin had been hesitant to send the Leopards or to allow other nations that have them in their possession to transfer them to Kyiv, with reports early last week saying that Germany would agree to do so only if the U.S. provided its own tanks. The decision by the U.S. to send its Abrams seems to have provided the political cover that Berlin had been seeking. Ukrainian officials have said the tanks would be a game-changer on the battlefield. The country's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has called for a large number of tanks to repel Russian attacks.
Today, by the way, there's a lot of talk about tanks, about modern tanks that we need, and about the way this shortfall can be filled. A lot of efforts, words, promises. But it is important not to lose sight of reality. It is not about 5 or 10 or 15 tanks. The need is larger.
Zelensky said that Ukraine's allies have the required number of tanks to strengthen the country's defense against Russia. Since the beginning of the war, Ukraine's allies have sent Kyiv tens of billions of dollars worth of weapons. Western countries have also imposed a slew of economic sanctions on Moscow. Now, by escalating their support for Ukraine's military, the US and NATO have created an incentive structure for Moscow to take a drastic, aggressive step to show the seriousness of its own red lines.
Overcrowded hospitals and medication shortages contribute to a growing health crisis across the European Union. Now, critics claim the West's anti-Russia and anti-China policies are fueling the emergency situation. Jerome Hughes has your details from Brussels.
Due to a surge in respiratory infections, hospital emergency departments in many EU countries are currently being overwhelmed. Hundreds of drugs to treat winter-related illnesses are unavailable in most of the bloc's 27 nations. The crisis has been raised in the European Parliament.
We debate again about shortage of different medicines, most notably antibiotics. This debate is the proof that the European Commission is not the solution, but the cause of many problems all across Europe.
EU inflation is very high because of energy sanctions against Russia. The production of drugs in the bloc has slumped because of rising manufacturing costs associated with inflation. China is a major supplier, but relations between Brussels and Beijing have deteriorated.
We are witnessing public health systems across the EU become overwhelmed and exhausted as a result of the recent surge of COVID-19, flu, and RSV patients.
Critics say as a result of following US foreign policy, EU leaders have created a new health crisis by jeopardising global supply chains. A growing number of EU health workers are forced to stay at home after becoming ill themselves.
The workers in the field are not getting to work. They are perhaps at work and not being productive sufficiently or not contributing well. And that affects the economy at the same time.
Experts say standards in health services across the EU vary greatly. Statistics show a person in intensive care with COVID-19 in Luxembourg has a 65% chance of survival. In fellow EU nation Romania, it's just 25%. There are warnings the current health emergency could get even worse.
The COVID virus is still circulating within Europe, and I wanted to share with you that we're closely monitoring the situation in China and, of course, in the United States, where a new Omicron subvariant has appeared.
It was left to Russia to fly in emergency medical equipment to Italy when COVID-19 first struck Europe. It's the type of cooperation we are unlikely to see again anytime soon. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Improved shortages of basic commodities, including food and fuel, are exacerbating an already tense situation over a month into violent anti-government protests. Dozens of roadblocks erected by protesters have hindered freight deliveries to the country's southern regions. These are parts of Peru where protests have been more violent since the ouster of former President Pedro Castillo. Liquefied petroleum gas has also become scarce in several regions. Meanwhile, prices of basic food items such as potatoes and tomatoes have tripled. Peru's transportation ministry says 85 roadblocks are still in place throughout the country. President Dina Boluarte has urged Congress to approve an early general election as soon as possible. Her call came amid heavy pressure following the worst wave of protests in at least two decades in the Latin American country. More than 50 people have so far been killed in clashes with police and a blockade. Thanks for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
In the Limelight.
There are reports that the Zionist regime's cabinet members have recently gathered to initiate a new wave of demolitions against Palestinian homes. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote in this regard, key Israeli regime cabinet members have gathered to initiate a new wave of demolitions against Palestinians' homes in Area C after a dispute erupted over the rare expulsion of illegal Jewish settlers from a new outpost in the occupied West Bank, the New Arab reported. Far-right ministers reportedly agreed to forcibly halt all new Palestinian building projects in Area C, which accounts for 60% of all land in the West Bank, before they reach completion, according to Israeli media. All major Palestinian cities in the West Bank, including Ramallah, Nablus, Al-Khalil, Beit Lahm, and Jericho, are surrounded by land designated as Area C, seen as essential to any future Palestinian state. According to Israel Hayom, this new phase of land disposition has received the blessing of the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after a dispute between Likud War Minister Yoav Gallant and far-right Bezalel Smotrich, who also holds a ministerial post in the War Ministry. The disagreement came after the Zionist regime army took the rare decision to evict a number of Jewish settlers from an unauthorized outpost in the occupied West Bank erected hours earlier. The move provoked the anger of pro-settler activists and members of Netanyahu's far-right cabinet, including Smotrich, who himself lives in a settlement in the occupied West Bank. Netanyahu issued a statement saying the government supports settlements, but only when they are done legally and in prior coordination with the prime minister and security officials, which did not happen in this case. Smotrich had tried to order the army to cancel the demolition of the Wildcat settlement. Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, also living in a settlement, attacked the decision in the Knesset, alleging that the Zionist regime army demolishes more Jewish settlements than it does Palestinian homes. Meanwhile, Wafa News Agency reported that the Zionist regime occupation authorities demolished an agricultural room in East Al-Quds neighborhood of Isavia. According to a local activist, Mohammed Abu Humus said the Zionist regime police accompanying a bulldozer barged into cultivated land isolated by a section of the Zionist regime's apartheid wall in the eastern part of the neighborhood, where the heavy machinery knocked down an agricultural structure. He added that police seized olive and citrus saplings in addition to a water tank. Wafa News Agency also said the reports that the Zionist regime army has recently admitted its forces have recently killed a Palestinian who posed no imminent danger. The army confirmed that 45-year-old father of four, Ahmad Hassan Kale, was unnecessarily shot dead in front of his son, in front of his 20-year-old son, Qusay, outside Silva town, northeast of the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah, on the morning of Sunday, January 15th. Kahle was one of the dozens of Palestinian commuters stuck in traffic during morning rush hour caused by an army checkpoint erected at the town entrance. He was shot point blank with a single bullet in the neck during a physical scuffle with the Zionist regime troops, after the latter forced him and his son to exit their car. Qusay said that he and his father were on their way to work when the troops topped their vehicle shortly after a sound bomb was fired at the car. According to him, it was then when the Zionist troops pepper-sprayed the Palestinian father of four and forced him to get out of the car before he fainted. The Zionist media claimed in their initial reports at the time of the shooting that Kahle was shot while allegedly attempting to carry out a stabbing attack. However, following a viral video footage from the scene, the Zionist media edited their article to quote Israeli regime army sources as saying the Zionist troops opened fire after trying to arrest Kahle and that he additionally tried to snatch one of their guns.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone, and our heartfelt condolences to you all On the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Ali al-Naqi al-Hadi, peace be upon him, the 10th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Let us now listen to a thought-provoking aphorism from him. Allah has made this world for trial and tribulation, while He has made afterlife for receiving the result. He has also made the misfortunes of this world the cause of gaining the rewards of the hereafter, and made the rewards of the life to come as the compensation for the misfortunes of this world.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Women's Legal Right on Husband in the Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the women's legal rights on the husband in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings, it is necessary upon the man or the husband to pay the dowry to the wife, and it has been necessary because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made this money for the wife, that after the marriage, if she wants to spend it in any place where she wants to buy anything, or she wants to enjoy the money that she has got after the marriage, she could do that, and she should not be waiting for the husband to maybe pay something to her. Therefore, Allah has made this necessity upon the man to give or pay the dowry to the wife after the marriage. Another responsibility or the right of the woman is that it is necessary for the man to provide the security in the family. He must provide the security. The family must be secure. The place where they're living must be secure. So she feels secure when she's living with her husband. She must feel secure at the place where she's living. As per the wealth or the money, as per the life, she must feel secure. She must not feel insecure in financial terms. She must not feel insecure in the terms of life, or she must not feel that she is in the danger. Therefore, it is necessary upon the husband to provide the security to the wife so that she can have a peaceful life living with him, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We'll be talking about the topic of the woman's legal right on the husband in the Islamic lifestyle. Now, one of the other rights of the woman is that the man or the husband must not lack of zeal. He must not lack of zeal. He must have he must take care of his wife. He must not allow his wife to be in a place where everyone can see. Unfortunately, when I talk about the Western culture, the non-Islamic culture, today we see that the man likes his wife to basically put on makeup, put on the unethical clothes and go out, and he show off his wife to the people that look how beautiful wife do I have, or the girlfriend, for example, like if we're talking about the non-Islamic culture. This is forbidden in Islam. The wife and the husband, they must adorn themselves for each other. The wife must adorn herself for the husband. Therefore, this lack of zeal will result in the corruption. You know, other people who are looking at someone's wife, who are looking at someone's, you know, honor, at someone's zeal. So it is not permissible in Islam. Therefore, Islam says that the man must provide a secure place to the woman, and the man should show him being the man of the house. He should protect his wife from the sights of the people, from the gaze of the people, from the talks of the people, from any kind of insecurity in which she is uncomfortable, or where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said that this will bring disrespect for you. So if woman is in hijab, she's observing hijab, she's observing veil, that is a dignity or the respect for the woman herself. And it brings that dignity and respect for the husband as well. So therefore, it is necessary for the husband to secure his family from such consequences, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
KO Terrace Part 2.
Mind-altering practices. Unquestioning commitment to the group. Cult of personality. Preoccupation with bringing in new members. Shifting alliances in exchange for power. These are the guidelines of a cult. What if we told you that this dangerous cult has its base in Paris, France?
By some luck, or maybe some unluck performance, we found that there was an organization in France, and this organization used to have some people, some member, that decided to burn themselves. So we try to know why they decided to burn themselves in the middle of the street in Paris in a day of July in 2003. Far
from where this family lives, we meet two ex-members of MEK. They are the ones who can best describe why this is not an organization but a cult, since they escaped from it with great difficulty. They got married a month ago and are now trying to catch up with the time they lost. They have spent the most precious years of their lives away from their country, a country that they have rediscovered. Back in France, Anvers and Françoise are ready to carry out a new action. They are going back to Auvers-sur-Oise to speak with the new mayor of the town. This time, they bring no banners or slogans. They are visiting to make sure the new mayor knows about the presence of a dangerous organization in town. Apparently, Anvers and Françoise have been recognized. Issue reporting some MEK enemies in town. Strange reaction. An organization fighting against cults so surprising? Or maybe she knows who Anvers is talking about? Confirmed. She knows who Anvers is talking about and also who he is. She doesn't authorize demonstrations in town, in France? Where is freedom of expression? What is she hiding? How can a so-called peaceful organization act so strangely? Our team wanted to know why. If Western authorities know about the terrorist past of this organization, why do many politicians agree to attend their rally in Villepinte every June, where thousands of people gather to support Mariam Rajavi and the MEK organization? So we came to the meeting this year. And to our surprise, we found hundreds of buses with thousands of people from all over Europe and the Middle East. Afghans, Syrians, Poles, Ukrainians, Czechs, Germans. However, the Iranians attending the meeting were the minority.
You came all over here just for this weekend?
Yeah, just for that conversation here. Yeah.
But they invited you?
Yes, of course.
Nice, it's good.
Like everybody here. Yeah.
Okay. So have you been inside?
Of course.
And? You don't understand?
No, nothing.
Okay.
Too much speaking, and I want to sleep. And we come outside, drink, eat, relax.
But you have to spend the whole day here.
Yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, but tomorrow no?
No. Tomorrow we go to Paris. Yes. Make photos and stuff like that.
When did you arrive?
Today morning. 11.
And you leave?
Tomorrow.
By bus?
Yeah.
Okay. So, where do you come from?
From Prague.
And you came all over here just for the meeting?
Yes, and to Paris too.
But they paid for the whole trip, right?
No, we have to pay something, but a small amount of money.
Okay. And were you inside the meeting?
Yes, like for 3 hours.
And what do you think, or what did you understand?
I think it's a strategy to bring us here because it's Paris and they made it very cheap so they can have their rally, but we are not allowed to go out to the buses or to the hotel because otherwise they won't give us the key to enter to the hotel. So it's the only way to keep us here, and not even here, we are in the grass sitting because they are just trying to support this woman that is outside of Iran and won't change anything because she doesn't have enough support. So we are the only ones here, but we are forced to stay.
How do you feel after having seen what's inside?
I feel really disappointed because I came here because there was some organization who proposed this trip to Paris in order to know about this conference, which was, I was told it was about human rights of these Iranian people. And so I came kind of excited about this because I studied journalism. For me, it's kind of interesting. But when I came here, the first that I saw was the bad organization, which meant something to me, like something really strange, because if you come to some event like this, they supposed to be more organized and take care about this kind of stuff. So we were waiting like 2 hours outside, waiting to go inside, Then once we were inside, it seems to be like we were in some kind of, I don't know, performance or something like this, because...
political rally.
Exactly, like political rally. And they didn't talk about the topics that I was told, but she was like, they were talking about more like to support these ideas they have, I don't know. And it seemed to be like they didn't care about people around, because people were doing like whatever, but not putting attention. So I think, I feel like they, like I was lied.
How many people are here today? 100,000? 110,000? How often have you come here?
So the real question is not how many people are here today, but how many Iranians are here, and also how many people have not been brought here with a trip to Paris as bait to attend this meeting. Let us explain how the people are distributed inside the building where this rally is taking place. All the tourists occupy 90% of the space. In each seat, they can find T-shirts, flags, and all sorts of gadgets to look like good supporters in front of the cameras. But closer to the stage, we have a VIP zone where all the Iranians are meant to be sitting. One would think that at such a huge meeting, this zone would be packed. But here is a still taken from the MEK's official video, where we can see a lot of empty seats. And not only that, you have to have a bracelet to get in. We obviously had not been invited as VIPs, but we found a young lady from the MEK organization distributing those bracelets for the VIP zone in a kind of hidden place. So there we go, inside the VIP zone, to find some Iranians, the only supporters they got, MEK members, and plenty of empty seats.
A country and an Ayatollah who dedicates himself to the destruction of one of our strongest allies, the State of Israel, who almost every week says, destruction to the State of Israel. We unequivocally support a non-nuclear Iran. Now, what does a non-nuclear Iran mean? It doesn't mean 2 months away from being able to have a nuclear missile. It doesn't mean 1 year away from having a nuclear missile. It doesn't mean an Iran that will become a nuclear power in 10 years.
The first time the organization had revealed some facts about Iran's nuclear activities, this information was given to the organization by the Israeli intelligence. And since they didn't want to reveal it themselves, they wanted some Iranians to do that. They went to the monarchists and Reza Pahlavi to do it. They didn't accept. They said they would not do against the interest of their country. But the MKO accepted to do that. And this was the start of Iranian nuclear crisis. And after that, MKO had no role in it. But they wanted to keep their role because they claimed that they got this information from their sources inside Iran. So each time they used to fabricate some lies, give it out as Iranians' nuclear activities, which was not true. And many times it was proven that it was not true. They wanted to be part of this West's manufacture of crisis against Iran.
While MEK's political rally is taking place in Villepinte, former MEK members are demonstrating against the MEK and the Rajavis in the very center of Paris.
Rajavi, terrorists! Terrorists, Rajavi!
Rajavi, terrorists, terrorists, Rajavi! Rajavi, Daesh, Daesh, Rajavi!
Rajavi, Daesh, Daesh, Rajavi!
Rajavi is a murderer!
I'm afraid of something can happen to me or to my family. And it's true that when you have someone that is ready to threat you in front of police, in front of security guard, in front of any kind of security of authority, official authority, I'm a little bit afraid. Yes, I'm a little bit afraid. It's true that they succeeded in a kind of way. They succeeded to stop us by their threat, by their violence, because if I can ask you something, what do you do in front of someone ready to burn himself? They are very dangerous. I think we can continue our action, and we will continue our action, because freedom has to win. But for now, we decided to continue in another way, by communication. Communication is the key.
Many secrets remain in Auvers-sur-Oise that our team has not been able to unearth. But one thing we know is that in the very heart of Europe, a group of young French activists have been threatened by a so-called peaceful organization. They are afraid of carrying on with their plan of combating cults. In Auvers-sur-Oise, there are still many residents unaware of the origins of the terrorist group living in their town right beside them.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
When the term de-dollarization was coined, there was a concrete idea behind it, that the U.S. currency would be uncrowned someday. And when we talk about the U.S. decline, we cannot avoid talking about de-dollarization and the end of dollar hegemony in the world. Believe it or not, the world is going to be multipolar as world economies are exhausted by the U.S. military and financial bullying. So efforts are underway to topple the dollar. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, Brazil and Argentina are reportedly set to start work on creating a currency union that would eventually involve other nations on the continent. Brazil and Argentina plan to create a common currency, the Financial Times has reported recently, citing officials. The plan will be discussed and officially announced at a summit in Buenos Aires, according to the report. Argentina's economy minister Sergio Massa told the news outlet there will be a decision to start studying the parameters needed for a common currency, which includes everything from fiscal issues to the size of the economy and the role of central banks. According to Massa, other Latin American nations will be invited to join the Common Currency Project. Brazil is proposing calling the new currency SUR, which translates as South. Massa noted the creation of the SUR is likely to take years, pointing to the fact that it took Europe 35 years to create the euro. It would be a study of mechanisms for trade integration. I don't want to create any false expectations. It's the first step on a long road which Latin America must travel, he said. Other officials who spoke to the news outlet said the new currency is expected to boost regional trade and help cut the country's reliance on the U.S. dollar. Brazil and Argentina have discussed the idea of a common currency for several years, but Brazil's central bank previously blocked efforts to get such an initiative off the ground, sources told the Financial Times. The two countries boast the largest economies in South America. Brazil is a member of the BRICS group and has enjoyed relative economic stability in recent years, although analysts point to a number of headwinds that could dampen growth this year. Argentina, meanwhile, has been plagued by economic instability for decades. The country has defaulted on its debt several times, most recently in 2020, and has had to resort to capital controls to protect its currency. Inflation in the country is currently soaring, and it has a roughly $40 billion debt to the IMF. Meanwhile, modern diplomacy had an eye on this issue. The de-dollarization, riding the West's primary point of concern, should be Russia and China's recent commitment to de-dollarize their transactions and establish a financial bubble immune to Western sanctions, notes the National Interest. There is a tendency in the West to discount Russian projects that supply the country with enough funds to make it to the next month, but cannot realistically last for an extended period of time. The problem with this mindset, though, is that Russia has no intention of reverting back to its participation in the U.S.-led international system, since it is convinced that China holds the future. Just as Putin demanded that European companies pay for Russian oil and gas in rubles or gold at the beginning of the year, he has also pressed Chinese energy firms to pay for gas in ruble or yuan. Russian banks have begun issuing checking and savings accounts in Chinese yuan. Russian Finance Minister Anton Silonov said during an interview, purchases of currencies of unfriendly countries, primarily dollars and euros, are now impossible. For us, these currencies are toxic. When asked why Russian assets in dollars and euros are still accumulating abroad if Moscow intends to dissolve all links to these currencies, Sulanov maintained that Russia is in the process of abandoning them before adding a curious line. The only options that remain for Russia are ruble, a currency that we trust, or imports that are of our interest. Moscow has made its greatest strides toward de-dollarization domestically, however, and this initiative is inextricable from its coercive natural resource diplomacy. For instance, major fuel and oil companies are planning to increase the use of yuan in their operations. Reports say in August 2022, Russians bought a record number of the Chinese currency after Beijing doubled the yuan ruble trading band in March to provide more flexibility in currency exchanges. Putin said that Russia will not give up the dollar but will instead dramatically reduce its shares.
The fans.
Football is one of the most lucrative businesses in our time. Not many industries can overtake it. Football is the most powerful non-media phenomenon in the world. All tycoons and influential people want to have control over it. Football is the most important news in the world. All cameras are fixed on the green field. Think about it a little. What can you find in this world that's not tied to football? We can't shut our eyes. Football is everywhere. It's so conspicuous and omnipresent that you cannot deny it. Fans and spectators, the strongest impetus for football. Just imagine for a moment what would have happened if football didn't enjoy such a huge popular support. This is a rule. The larger the number of the people who are engaged in a phenomenon, the more significant the phenomenon will be. Football gets its power from the cheering of the fans. But why do people become fans? Wherever in the world 22 people run after a ball, some spectators will definitely show up. In some places, fewer people, and in some other places, more people. And sometimes, there is such a huge crowd of spectators and fans that it hinders the match. For example, in the final match of the knockout games in Britain in 1923, over 300,000 people stormed the stadium. Many other matches in the history of the sport had so many spectators that they had to sit up to the sidelines. Fans, whether it's stadiums or in front of TV screens or monitors, will be an integral part of matches and events related to them. They jump up and down, they cry, they shout and get mad as far as getting a heart attack. They swear, they fight, they cause mayhem, and sometimes they even get killed. The spectators cheer their favorite teams and players and give them energy. Sometimes they do it so well, it leads to a comeback. The spectators boo the rival team's players and make them nervous. Yeah. Even if it's necessary, they disrupt the games. As it's always said, they're the 12 players of their team. That's why all players and coaches share their happiness with them, because football spectators are not just watchers of a sports match. For those who watch matches under scorching heat or heavy snow, football